WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? You are now rocking with Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin, for this, yes, Tuesday, February 17th. We have a great show in store for you today, guys. Of course, we will recap last night's Play for K breast cancer awareness game as Susie Merchant and the MSU women's basketball team took on number 5 Maryland. And I tell you what, they made it a night to remember, folks. It went down to the wire. Michigan State, with all of its injuries, still showing that they have a lot of fight in them. You'll hear from Susie Merchant as well. We'll also give you a preview of tonight's rivalry matchup. Michigan State and U of M, they get it on tonight at 9 p.m. We'll give you a preview of that game. Also talk about Kevin Durant, one of the best NBA players in the game, deciding to keep his mouth shut and go silent. Interesting story on that one. We'll also be diving into Top 5 Tuesday and listing the top 5 worst sporting events today. You don't want to miss that. We're going to have a lot of fun with a lot of discussion and encourage you all to call in. But first, let's start the show like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners again for this February 17th. All right, again, let's start with Spartan women's basketball. The MSU women's basketball team fell just short of an upset on Monday as they lost to the 5th-ranked Maryland Terrapins, 75-69. The Spartans led 50-49 with, get this, just under 10 minutes to play. But they could not hold off the Terrapins down the stretch. Ariel Powers led the Spartans with 18 points, and both Tori Jankowska and Becca Mills added 14 each. Now, the loss drops Michigan State to 1-4 in their last 5 games. All right, the MSU men's basketball team will play part 2 of their in-state rivalry tonight as they head to Ann Arbor to take on U of M. Now, the Spartans needed overtime to defeat the Wolverines in their last meeting, if you remember, winning 76-66. Now, MSU has won the last 2 meetings, but the Wolverines have won 6 of the last 10 in this series. Tip-off is set for 9 p.m., and the game will be televised on ESPN. All right, the Lansing Community College men's basketball team defeated Kalamazoo Valley Community College in the MCCAA conference game, 81-72, the final of that one. Now, the win helps LCC improve to 16-9 on the year and 8-4 in conference play. Colin Jones and Mo Ba, how about that name? I'm serious, folks. Mo Ba. They each had a double-double, with Jones going for 12 points and 10 rebounds. Now, Ba added 10 points and 10 rebounds as well. All right, the Lansing Marathon, scheduled for this spring, has been canceled. Now, race director Owen Anderson released a statement yesterday citing lack of support as the reason behind the cancellation. Now, starting in 2012, this would have been the 4th year for the race. And we're actually going to have Owen Anderson on the show this week to talk about why this event canceled. Sad stuff, because I know a lot of people that were actually preparing for that marathon. All right, Lansing Sexton is set to induct their second Athletic Hall of Fame class on Friday. Now, the class consists of 7 individuals and 4 teams and is headlined by former swimming and diving coach Matt Mann and former state champion football coach Russ Maples, both of whom are sadly deceased. Now, the late former basketball star Brian Ferguson, former fullback Dick Allen, and wrestlers Fritz Kellerman and Emerson Bowles round out some of the group. So there you have that. Again, folks, that will be taking place Friday. All right, Grand Ledger's girls varsity competitive cheer team broke 3 school records last Thursday as they placed 3rd in the CAAC Red Division 4 competitive cheer championship. Now, the records broken were first round score of 221, third round score of 298, for a total score of 701.18. Now, the team then set another record at the Lakewood Invitational on February 14th, Valentine's Day, with a total score of 719.8. Now, the Lady Comets will compete in districts on February 21st, at Lake Orion. All right, the Detroit Red Wings, they dropped a hard-fought game Monday night as they fell to the Montreal Canadiens 2-0.
Harrison couldn't keep it in. A break here on the wing comes Pacioretty. Saved by Howard. Well out in front of two to make the save. The Canucks scores!
Jimmy Howard was in goal for the Wings and made 27 saves, but it was not enough to avoid defeat. Now, the Red Wings are currently amidst a rough spell at the moment as they have picked up just 1 point in their last three games. And last but certainly not least, Anthony Bosch, the former owner of the South Florida clinic that provided performance-enhancing drugs to MLB players, has been given a four-year prison sentence. Now, Bosch pleaded guilty in October to distributing testosterone to athletes from the clinic. Bosch had a number of high-profile clients, including, yes, New York Yankees star Alex Rodriguez. Well, that wraps up our current sports quick hit headliners again for this February 17th. Folks, our phone lines are now open. Alright, folks, and that number to call in if you want to weigh in on anything that we talk about on today's current sports radio is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Also, I have to remind you all that, hey, we usually tape Current Sports TV each and every Wednesday at 6 p.m. inside of the WKAR TV studios, but due to some scheduling mix-arounds here for this week, we have decided to move up that taping to today. That's right. Later on at 6 p.m., I'll be sitting down with a very good friend of mine, Rico Beard, who is the co-host of the Ryan and Rico show on Detroit Sports 105.1, which airs each and every morning. Ryan and Rico, it's a great show if you guys haven't listened to it. But Rico, me and him, we have a lot of history because Rico is actually my fraternity brother. He actually pledged me when I was here at Michigan State University during my freshman year of college. Good times, good times. And Rico and I have always stayed pretty close, of course, naturally working in the same industry. So Rico will be making the drive up to East Lansing today at 6 p.m. to sit down with me to give his thoughts and analysis on the MSU men's basketball team, on the football year that was, and also to give a little insight into his road into the world of sports talk radio and so much more. So you don't want to miss that, folks. Again, you can sign up online for free at WKAR.org if you want to be a part of that live studio audience. But man, oh man, do we have a hot show in store for you today. A lot of discussion, folks. Again, if you want to weigh in, the number to call again is 517-355-9527. Later on, you guys know, each and every Tuesday, we love to bring to you a top five sporting topic, right? Whether it be the top five point guards of all time, whether it be the top five running backs of all time, whether it be the top, you know, five Michigan State football games of all time. And we've covered those aspects pretty clearly throughout this segment on Current Sports. But today we're going to bring to you a pretty interesting and fun one, to say the least. Today we are going to bring you, for Top 5 Tuesday, the top five worst sporting events. Yes, the top five worst sporting events. What do you guys think it is? Because what really got me thinking here as to why I wanted to bring this segment to today's show, specifically on that subject, was because I was sitting back and I was watching the NBA All-Star festivities, you know, watching what took place on Saturday, which actually turned out to be a pretty entertaining Saturday night for at least the skills competition, the three-point contest, and the dunk contest. Pretty entertaining, more so than I had expected. I mean, I tell you what, watching the dunk contest and watching Zach LaVine do his thing, I mean, he was pretty entertaining. And then, of course, watching the three-point competition with Steph Curry, I mean, he lit it up. But the game itself on Sunday was really kind of ho-hum, pretty boring. You know, I watched it. I watched a lot of it, to be honest with you, but I was also flipping back and forth between that and the SNL 40th anniversary, which actually completely trounced the NBA All-Star Games ratings for that day. So, you know, it just got me thinking, you know, what exactly are, other than the NBA All-Star Game, what exactly are the top worst sporting events to look at? And I just got to thinking, so there's a lot that definitely come to mind. Of course, spoiler alert, of course, the NBA All-Star Game does make my list because I just think there's just no defense, guys just running around. You know, it's kind of like watching a pickup game, a bad pickup game at that, because at least in a pickup game, you know, whether it be on a real hot summer day, at least those guys are trying somewhat, depending on what personnel you're playing with, to play some sort of defense. But these NBA guys, they come to the All-Star Game. You know, it's a great, great accomplishment, and they want to be acknowledged. They want to play because it's a fun game to play in. But at the same time, they still have another half of the season left to play, and they don't want to get injured at all on some freakishly bad play. So they kind of just take it easy. They have a lot of fun. A lot of these players are already buddy-buddy at that. So the competitive nature is really none. There is no competitive nature in that game. So it's really lost a lot of appeal over the years. So, yeah, the NBA All-Star Game does make my list. You'll get to hear my full list later on in the show. And again, we encourage you all to call in. What exactly is the worst sporting event to watch? I'm curious to get your thoughts. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Also, you can even tweet me at AlMartinWKR. I'll read all your tweets and or comments on Facebook, our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, right here live on the air. Well, I want to start the show first by acknowledging the MSU women's basketball team. If you're just now tuning in, of course, I talked about them briefly in our current sports quick hit headliners. Michigan State, they fell just short of an upset last night as they lost to the number 5 team in all of the nation. That's right, Maryland. Maryland, they're so good. I don't know if you guys have watched Maryland, but if you remember last year, Maryland actually made it all the way, folks, to the Final Four. I mean, they are that good, and it's always fun to watch this team work and play and to see the different, you know, because, I mean, naturally, when you make a Final Four and you've had the recent success that Maryland has had, I mean, naturally, that draws a lot of eyeballs, and a lot of girls, frankly, want to play for that program. So, I mean, watching them last night in person, I was in the house at the Breslin Center to witness that one again. I mean, the Spartans, too. I mean, they put up a valiant fight, and that says a lot considering all of the circumstances that this team has gone through this year. It was actually a one-point lead for the Spartans with just under 10 minutes to play, but again, the Terrapins then went on a bit of a roll and closed it out. Here's actually, what you're about to hear is actually from the Maryland head coach and also Susie Merchant on the game. And I tell you what, the word toughness is one that was rattled around quite a lot in this post-game presser.
They're tough. They're scrappy. They rebound extremely hard. They battle. I think this group has really done a nice job in terms of sharing the basketball and kind of understanding where each other's at.
Yeah, I mean, I think we played them as tough as anybody's played them, Maryland, all year. You know, we're getting better. It's just, I think, you know, it's just you only have so many people, so it makes it hard, you know, if there's a foul trouble or somebody's not playing good. It's like you don't have a lot of options and combinations to throw out there, you know. But one thing I do know is this team has battled every time they've stepped. I mean, the last time I feel like we didn't compete was when we played at Maryland. So I told the kids, like, you know, at the end of the day, it's like you just can't, you know, you can't be like little gnats buzzing around. Like, you got to man up a little bit. I mean, I don't mean to sound sexist, but that's what I used, you know. I was like, they just manhandled us 1 through 5. I mean, it was a layup drill. It was any rebound, any post, any guard. It was ridiculous, you know. So, I mean, we did have some game plans. Not like you just say, go play and be tougher. But, I mean, they did do some really good things, I thought, from an execution standpoint. Both ends of the floor, but it just, so I'm proud of them on that level, but I do think, you know, we have our moments. It's just, you don't have, you know, I think fatigue sometimes sets in a little bit and kind of bites us in the butt sometimes. if I can say that out loud in a press conference, that word. You know, just trying to be fresh. You know, we've had a lot of one-day preps, which to me is like the hardest thing and hardest pill to swallow, but it's the right thing to do. A lot more walkthroughs in film than I would ever like to do, but I think it helps us be fresher on game night, and they've been able to translate for the most part what we need them to do. They just don't always, you know, there's just a handful of times that we just kind of lose our minds or empty possessions that turn into tough situations for us. I thought we had some opportunities we just left empty. It's not the reason we lost the game, because there's a lot of reasons why we lost the game, and I'll just start at the free throw line. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we fought and battled, and you can only get them open looks and opportunities. You know, they got to knock them down.
Yeah, as you just heard there again, that was head coach for the Maryland Terrapins women's basketball team, Brenda Freese. That's the first voice you heard. And then, of course, that transitioned into Susie Merchant of the MSU women's basketball team. And then, of course, you know, this is a team that has battled through so much this year. But I tell you what, they had opportunities last night, folks. I mean, and this would have been one of the lead headliners, I guarantee it, nationally on ESPN, if Michigan State would have pulled out this game. Because, you know, when you look at it, I mean, if Michigan State just hits their free throws, if they just do that, you know, which sounds simple, but for the men and women, I guess, this year, not so much for the women, because they, I mean, that hasn't been a big storyline for this year, the Michigan State women's basketball team not performing at the free throw line. But for the men, certainly it has. But for the women, I mean, it was certainly an Achilles heel for them, because they went 7 of 18 from the free throw line, folks. 39%. If you look at the margin of victory in this game, I mean, 69-75, if Michigan State hits those free throws, they win the game. Point blank, period. It comes down to the little things in games like this. And, I mean, what a story that would have been. I mean, Michigan State, you know, beating an undefeated team, at least in Big Ten play, again, in Maryland. I mean, that would have been huge. And again, they had a 1-point lead with 9:58 remaining in the game. And then it seemed as though Maryland kind of just turned up the game a notch, and they outscored MSU 14-2 over the next 4 minutes. And that sort of just sparked everything for them. And also, Michigan State was also, this was a big key to the game as well. You talk about getting those second chance opportunities, getting those offensive rebounds off of misses and so on and so forth. I tell you what, Michigan State didn't have a lot of those opportunities, folks. They got out-rebounded 46-32, a 46-32 rebounding edge for Maryland. So when it came to those second chance opportunities, Maryland certainly had their handful, and they were able to close that game out. And then, you know, what was really impressive to me, and what has been impressive is again, I mean, you know, it was an interesting article written by, again, Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal, where Graham sort of talked about how this week was supposed to be one that could have been special. Michigan State, let's just say this season went average form, and they were in the Big Ten hunt, possibly competing with the Marylands of the Big Ten Conference to win a Big Ten championship. You know, and they enter this week going against Maryland. I mean, if Michigan State played just relatively average, I mean, coming close and possibly beating a Maryland team at full strength, that would have been a huge story. And, you know, when you lose, you know, your point guard in Kiana Johnson, who was kicked out of the school, Brandy Agee, who was out for the year due to injury, Jasmine Hines, who was the same scenario, out for the year due to injury, Madison Williams, who has had constant knee injuries and decided to really just hang up her sneakers, and, of course, the mid-season just fiasco of Jasmine Lumpkin leaving the team. All of that, throughout all of that adversity, Michigan State has still been able to compete against anybody they play, specifically the big dogs. And if you remember, you know, I kind of had a flashback covering that game last night, because I remember the beginning of the year, Michigan State had more healthy bodies, certainly, than they do now, but they pushed Notre Dame, who is, I believe, number 4 in the nation. Actually, Notre Dame played right after Michigan State had taken the hardwood and lost to Maryland last night, and I'm sitting there waiting on Susie Merchant to come to the presser, and I'm looking to my right and watching Notre Dame play, and I said to myself, wow, Michigan State has pushed Notre Dame and Maryland to the brink of almost beating them. And, you know, the thought just kind of crossed my mind as to at what point do moral victories stop become looked at as moral victories? Because it's all fine and dandy to push a team that you're not expected to beat to that edge, to that brink, to make them work a little bit harder to get that win. But at the end of the day, you do still lose the game. And looking at Susie Merchant, knowing the type of competitor she is, at one point do you say, yeah, it's all fine and dandy, we might have came close? It is certainly a moral victory, but at what point does it stop being viewed as that? So the thought just crossed my mind, because this is a team that has battled through so much. Ariel Powers, I mean, if she plays, and it's another thing. Okay, you talk about the little things here, and you talk about trends. Michigan State, they usually don't shoot 39% from the free throw line, folks. That was out of the ordinary. Another aspect to this whole thing, Ariel Powers, who has been a juggernaut for this team all year, folks, Ariel struggled throughout most of that game last night. She went 8 for 21, only had 2 assists, finished with 18 points, but a lot of it has to do with the fact that she took a lot of shots. I mean, Ariel Powers, an 8 for 21 night for Ariel Powers, that is out of the norm, folks. That's not a typical Ariel Power game. And she had good looks. And, you know, and looking at her performance and how, you know, and there was one point throughout that game where Ariel had stolen the ball. She goes out on a fast break, no one around her, and she just kind of just missed a point-blank layup. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, whoa, fatigue must be a factor here. Because you got, I mean, when you only have so many healthy bodies, these players have to play a lot of minutes. You know, close to 40 minutes a game. Ariel Powers has been a workhorse all year. And looking at her kind of struggle and sort of just labor throughout that game, fatigue is a word that certainly crossed my mind and made me say to myself, okay, maybe this team is not 100% from an overall stamina standpoint, because they are logging a lot of time on the hardwood. Jankowska, she also struggled, folks. She went 4 of 14 and took 5 threes, didn't hit nan one of them. 0 of 5 from behind the arc. That's kind of an odd stat line for Jankowska as well. I mean, now we've seen Jankowska sort of struggle throughout a few games this year. But again, Tori Jankowska and Ariel Powers, you can pretty much depend on to shoulder the scoring load and to be a big factor offensively. And we rarely see them have bad struggles shooting the basketball, but they certainly did. But it was very impressive, because even with your two main players struggling, Michigan State was still in this game. They were still in it, folks. And certain role players stepping up had to do with a lot of that conversation. Kara Miller, for instance, she went 4 of 8, 2 of 3 from three-point land, including a big three-pointer to actually tie the game in the second half. I mean, the crowd was going absolutely insane in the membrane at that point. Then Lexi Gussert also hit some key buckets down the stretch. She went 3 of 5, also 2 of 3 from three-point land, finished with 8 points. Gussert and Miller, I mean, they were fantastic. Then Anna Morrissey. Anna Morrissey was able to hit a few big buckets as well. So it's almost like those role players looked at what was going on and said, okay, Ariel struggling, Tori seems to just can't get it going right now, we need to salvage some momentum and really need to step up here. And they certainly did. And I'm, you know, looking back at it, I'm not a big woulda, coulda, shoulda type of a guy. But, I mean, if you really analyze this game, and I'm pretty sure when Susie Merchant looks at the game film, I don't know if she looked at it last night or maybe this morning, when she looks back at it, she is just going to say, wow, we were that close. That close. And you heard what Brenda Freeze said. I mean, just how tough this team is, it doesn't matter how much this team is down by. They are still going to give it their all and try to push you to make mental errors and mistakes. And they're going to try to capitalize on them. And again, this could have been a really, really special week for MSU women's basketball. And I think, you know, right now, when you look at their record this year and you look at all of the intangibles for this season, I don't know. Well, I think it's pretty much safe to say that this team isn't making the NCAA tournament. It's pretty much safe to say that, even though we still got the Big Ten tournament left to play, they still have a few games left. They actually only have one more home game left against Rutgers this Sunday at 2 p.m., which I will also be in the house for that and bring you coverage next week, Monday, on that game. But, I mean, the season is certainly flying by here, and it's hard to fathom that Michigan State is going to make the NCAA tournament. And also, I think you can probably put them on the bubble right now for the NIT as well. I don't know if they'll make the NIT. So right now, You can pretty much kind of just chalk it up as a rebuilding year, but I can pretty much guarantee that this team will be back in full vengeance next year, folks. But again, you know, hey, if you haven't seen this team play, If you want to go out and catch that game on Sunday, it's always a good one. You're going to see a good game nonetheless, folks. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. Want to transition now into tonight's big matchup. Michigan State and Michigan will be getting it on at the Chrysler Center in Ann Arbor. This is going to be a big, 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 big game with a lot of implications. And you talk about what the postseason yields for certain teams. Well, I tell you what, Michigan State racking up now back-to-back wins against Northwestern and Ohio State on Valentine's Day in the thrilling fashion that it was in the Breslin Center on Saturday. Denzel Valentine showing up. Michigan State, for me, again, big win for them on Saturday. But I have to see them rattle off a few more wins in a row in order to strengthen that case that they deserve to be playing in March in the NCAA tourney. I tell you what, this is a game where Michigan, if you look at the first meeting, looking at Sivilia, because I think this kid is going to really blossom into a very good player here at Michigan State. I think he has a good head on his shoulders. I really think he has a overall, when you talk about a point guard mindset, he reminds me a lot of the player that Mateen Cleaves was when Mateen was here back in that whole 2000 run where they went to the NCAA championship and won it. I think Lou Rawls Tum Tum Nearin Jr. is going to emerge as someone very special in Spartan lore. And I think you're starting to see that plant get watered. Game after game after game for Tum Tum. Let's look at his minutes in the first game here, folks. He played 7 minutes in that first meeting at the Breslin Center, Michigan versus Michigan State. He only played 7 minutes in the first meeting. If you remember, I gave my huge rant yesterday on how Tum Tum was a big, big factor as to why Michigan State beat Ohio State on Saturday. He played 36 minutes. 36 minutes. That's almost the entire game on Saturday, and did a relatively solid job. I think he did a great job at pushing the ball when need be in transition, trying to get those easy transition buckets. What Tum Tum brings to the table is he brings that added flair of penetration, which also opens up the court for other players to get open shots. When you have a penetrating guard, it just makes it easier. And Tum Tum is also starting to score a little bit. It seems as though game by game by game, he started to really pad the stat sheet when it comes to the points column, folks. I think he's growing in the confidence area. I really like Tum Tum. And seeing as though, you know, when you have a guard like Tum Tum, he relieves pressure, like I said yesterday, off of Denzel Valentine and Travis Trice, which makes their job a little bit easier. I think Tum Tum will be a big factor tonight and will also be a factor in changing the way how the outcome yielded, where Michigan State had to, of course, go to overtime to beat Michigan in that first meeting. I don't think we're seeing overtime tonight, folks. I think Michigan State does handle business tonight. Now, Brandon Dawson is also a guy you got to always key into, because Brandon Dawson, I think he's the engine of this team. This team goes when Brandon Dawson goes. In the first meeting, Brandon Dawson had 19 points, 10 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 blocks. I mean, that's an incredible stat sheet. Again, 19 points, 10 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 blocks. That's what his stat line looked against U of M that first meeting. Brandon Dawson has been a walking double-double. He still leads the Big Ten Conference in rebounding, and he is second in the Big Ten when it comes to block shots. He is a force on both sides of the basketball. And again, in order for Brandon Dawson to really, really affect the game, you got to get him involved early. That's the key. I think he will also be a big, big factor again today. Now, Brandon Dawson, when you look at a U of M team, they really don't have a lot of size down low. So Brandon Dawson can pretty much have a field day today. It was really alarming, though, how in that first meeting Michigan State had to go to overtime to beat Michigan. This will be a telling game as to how Michigan State closes out the season. Because, again, it's all fine and dandy to beat Northwestern and to get a big win against Ohio State, which almost, again, with a few, you know, bad plays here and there, Michigan State could have easily have lost that game just as much as they had won it. So I want to see Michigan State now close out games in a consistent manner and in a convincing manner on a consistent basis. You are supposed to beat a Michigan team that has lost 4 straight. You are supposed to beat a Michigan team that has gone 2-5 since losing one of its best players in Caris LeVert. You are supposed to beat a Michigan team that has gone 1-4 without both Caris LeVert and Derek Walton Jr., the starting point guard. And you are supposed to beat a team that is on the bubble preeminently when looking at their tournament chances, which are very, very slim. And this is a, I don't know if you guys know this, this is an interesting fact when looking at this whole, this entire season for U of M. Now, again, I had said that this is a team that will play for the NIT. I said that at the beginning, at the middle of the year when they were really, really struggling, even before the whole Caris LeVert injury. The Wolverines' starting chances, again, I think are very, very slim. And did you know this? Since the NCAA took over the NIT, if you remember back in 2005, no team that has a record under 500 has made the NIT. So even now, not only, I think it's pretty much I think a consensus that you can bury this team as far as making the NCAA tournament. But again, I thought they would at least make the NIT. But even now, you have to put them on the bubble when it comes to the NIT. So this is a Wolverines team that certainly does not want to lose to its in-state rival twice. They don't want a series sweep. They are going to come out and fight because they have had a lot of games that could have easily gone the other way. And it's been very impressive how John Beilein has coached this team into competing against anybody they play. Even though during late game situations, they can't seem to close out things. They've had a few overtime losses as well, including the one to Michigan State. But at the same time, you know they're going to fight. You know they're going to fight. They're at home. A lot of fans are going to be there. Michigan State has to come out focused. And looking at the history of Michigan State, the recent history as far as hoops is concerned out in Ann Arbor, Michigan State has actually lost four straight at the Chrysler Center. Four straight. So this is a big game. I mean, it's not diluted whatsoever because these are two teams that have a lot to play for still, folks, I think. We have a caller right now on line one. Kurt from Grand Ledge. How you doing, Kurt?
Not too bad, Al. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. You're loud and clear.
All right. Well, first of all, I want to comment on the Michigan stuff, but the first question I have is, you're taping with Rico today.
Yes.
Is that open to the public?
It is. It is. It should be on our way. If you go to WKRI.org and click on Current Sports TV, it should have a link to sign up online right there.
Well, I'm not sure if I'll be able to make it out or not.
Gotcha.
I'd really be interested to hear from Rico. You mentioned one of the things about his entry into sports talk and covering sports and stuff.
Right.
And my question, you know, it could be a question for you or anybody in sports journalism, is it possible to run yourself too thin in terms of all the different things you do? Because with Rico, you know, he's a contributor to Spartan Magazine. He does stuff on Jack Ebling's show, you know. And
right.
He's got his own sports talk show, and he's doing this and that. Is it possible to run yourself too thin to where your message gets heard in maybe too many venues and you lose relevancy?
Ah, that's a very, very I've never heard that question asked before, and that is a very, I will make sure I ask Rico that for our 12-man segment for this week. How's that sound, Kurt? That is a very good question. Very good question. You'll get my take on it in just a sec.
Okay. Well, now, here's the thing I want to talk to you about the Michigan State-Michigan game.
Yeah.
And that is, Beilein has that team running his offense, which is an offense that usually, a style of an offense that will usually give Michigan State some fits. Because the gist of that offense is that they don't really run screens, per se. They spread the floor a lot with everybody virtually out at the three-point line, throw the ball around out there, and then dribble drive. And that's been one of our bugaboos all year is dribble drive, penetration, defense. And what we've been trained to do forever and ever is to help. And when you help, then that opens up guys who are shooters out at the three-point line, and that's how Michigan thrives under John Beilein's offense.
Right.
So I like Tum Tum Nairn in the starting lineup because I've said before, going all the way back to the Indiana game when he started, that he gave them defense against the dribble drive situation, and I think he could help take Spike Albrecht's penetration away from him. And he, since I was in the stand and watched him penetrate against Michigan State at Breslin, because we were jumping out at him to guard his three-point shot so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tum-Tum's got enough quickness to take some of that away from him. But everybody's got to be able to clamp down and stop that dribble drive penetration so that whether it's Dawkins or the guy with four names, I can't remember all of them.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman, yeah.
That's it. Yeah, I knew it was Muhammad Ali's son. I couldn't figure out the other. I couldn't remember.
Right.
You know, so that those guys don't make hay, because that was basically what they were doing in the second half of that game when they made their run to take it into overtime, was drive to the basket. Stand
right
out there at the three-point line, spread them out so there's nobody can cover the middle and help out, and then drive to the basket.
Right. No, I agree. And you know what, Kirk? That's been one of the things I brought up as well. I've always, and even before the season started, I've always kind of called out Denzel Valentine and Travis Trice to be those guards that, hey, they have to improve defensively. Because, again, it seemed as though when you have, you know, and there's been multiple examples throughout this year. I mean, you go back to Melo Trimble. You can go back to Teron Petway. I mean, guards who are very athletic and can beat you with that first step, Michigan State has had trouble with guarding. And once they get into that paint, they can create, whether it be kicking it out to the open man once that penetration happens, or getting beat by the big guys, or beating the big guys, I should say, once they get down there and are either fouled and go to the line and shoot free throws, or convert for easy layups. So, yeah, I think you got to put added pressure. And out of all the guards MSU has on the team, I do agree, Kirk, Tum-Tum is the best on-ball defender and best defensive guard, period, that Michigan State has.
Well, and the other part that makes Michigan's offense difficult to deal with is that all five of their guys can shoot that three-pointer.
Right.
Even their big guys, Beal, Phelps, and Donald or whatever, quite frankly, they look more comfortable out at the three-point line than they do down low in the post or whatever. But
yeah.
So that's where you can't have a Schilling or a Costello or even a Dawson being able to help out too much, because when they go and help out, guess what? Their guy's the one that gets the ball kicked back out to him and is draining three.
Right. No, that's a great take. That is great. And also, to help you out, Kirk, so you don't have to pronounce Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman all the time, he actually announced this week that he actually goes by Mar. So M-A-A-R, just call him Mar.
Okay.
There you go. All right, Kirk, I'll make sure to ask Rico your question tonight too, my man.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Kirk. Appreciate that. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Great, great take from Kirk. I agree with pretty much his entire analysis of this Michigan team and what makes them dangerous and the reason why they hang around. I mean, it's very rare to see a John Beilein team get blown out, because John Beilein, one, is a great coach. And again, the type of offense they runs does give certain team fits, including Michigan State. So I'll be curious to see what type of adjustments Tom Izzo makes tonight as well. We also have our man Apachu online, too. Apachu, we haven't heard your voice in a while, man. We kind of miss you, my man.
Well, yeah, thank you. I've been on the street looking for work. I come back, find out you got all the jobs, man.
Yeah, right. I wish.
I mean, what do you got, four or five jobs, man?
Oh, man, I tell you what, I never sleep, Apachu. I never sleep, my man. Grind hard, baby.
Yeah. You remember that episode in Living Color where they did the Jamaican family and all the members had like five, 6 jobs each?
Yes, I do remember that one. That's a classic.
I was going to ask, you're Jamaican, man. You got a lot of jobs, brother.
It's probably in my blood, okay? It's probably in my blood.
I think the injuries this year for Michigan is a blessing in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
I think next year's going to be the year where they'll compete for the Big Ten championship and probably go deep in the tournament. They got a couple guys that if they improve any, are going to be pretty good post-up players. And you can see those freshmen coming up, man. They got some potential. I'm really impressed with that. I'm impressed with what Beilein's done with that team. Yeah, they don't close out very well, but I think that has to do with youth and the fact that you got teams that are just better. I think tight game. I think it'll be a dangerous game for Michigan State.
Right.
I think Michigan wants some respect, and they're going to have the crowd, and they're going to boost their self-esteem. So it's a dangerous game, and I think Izzo knows that, and I think Michigan State better be aware. It could happen.
And you know, Apachu, isn't it pretty remarkable? Because I always say, I mean, looking at, you know, watching especially this stretch in the season for U of M, I mean, just imagine where this team could be if they were healthy, if they had Caris LeVert and Derek Walton Jr. back. I always say that to myself. And, again, you got to give a lot of credit to John Beilein, because I do think that he is one of the best coaches in the nation, Apachu.
I think he got better.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was that good when he started.
Right.
I think he got better.
Right. Yeah.
He got better. He can realize the limitations and learn how he played in the Big Ten. He got better, and I think that's a sign of a good coach.
Correct.
He changed his style, you know. But anyway, good to talk to you guys. Good to listen to you, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, Apache.
Let me have one of them jobs.
Hey, I got you. We'll hook up after the show. I'll give you a call, Apache. Thanks a lot, man. And we also have my man Mike from Saginaw on line 3. Mike, you are on Current Sports. How you doing, brother?
How you doing, my man? And I know this is a very big, important drive. What I'd like to ask you is, what about the big man, like Michigan's big man compared to Michigan State's big man? I'm talking about Doyle and Bierenfeld versus Costello and all the people who are the forwards and the centers. What you think of their development over the year?
Yeah, I think, now don't get me wrong, I think Bierenfeld and Doyle, I think those guys are very solid players.
Sure.
But when you talk about the matchup between, you know, specifically for me, the key X factor when you're talking about the big man compared to Michigan and Michigan State is Brandon Dawson. It is hard for Max Bielefeld and Doyle to contain a freakishly athletic guy, for anyone for that matter, no matter what a team is, in Brandon Dawson, because he is so athletic. He's great at reading where the ball is going to drop and bounce off the rim when it comes to the rebounding. And also, it seems to me, I don't know if you've been watching Michigan State in this area for me, but I felt as though Brandon Dawson has been getting better offensively as the season has gone on.
Okay,
I remember if you were rewinding the tape of Current Sports a few months ago, Mike, you probably could probably easily pull a segment from me kind of bashing Brandon Dawson for not being a guy that can create his own offense. But I have seen a few flashes here and there in the Northwestern game and Ohio State game specifically where Brandon has said, give me the ball, I'm hitting this 15-footer. It's been pretty impressive, and that's hard to guard, coupled with the athletic talent of Dawson as well. So I just don't think it's a fair matchup between those two.
Okay, let me ask you two more questions to get you to other callers here. What do you think about Knicks? How I see all the Adrian Payne and Draymond Green and what's the guy from Denver name? I forgot
Gary
him
Harris.
Already, man.
Yeah.
But all of them came
right,
back
Gary
to
Harris.
See Michigan State play. What do you think about, you know, the ball players that used to play for Izzo coming back to watch them play during the NBA season?
That is always a cool thing that I always look forward to when covering the games, because you see, it's pretty cool to see, you know, Tom Izzo coach players. Tom Izzo always gets flack for not churning out NBA talent every single year on the regular, not churning out those first-round picks that Kentucky always turns out every single year. But the thing about Tom Izzo's program that's so special is that he develops these players throughout their tenure here at Michigan State, and they usually go on to do great things at the next level. Even Derek Nix was in the house over the weekend. But, you know, to see Adrian Payne, who has had kind of a rocky start to his NBA career, of course, he got traded to Minnesota not too long ago, playing for an Atlanta team that is, frankly, kind of hard to find a roster spot on because they're so good. Then, of course, you had Gary Harris, who also was kind of in that situation.
That's the one I was talking about,
Gary Harris for Denver, who is only averaging about 10 minutes per game, only about 2 points per game. He's still trying to find himself as well. But I think, I mean, when you look at a guy like Draymond Green, who, by the way, is about to be rolling in the dough, reading a few reports, Draymond Green is in conversation right now for Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA. And looking at just how he's been able to fit in a perfect puzzle piece with Golden State, which is a team that can definitely has a legit shot at winning the NBA title this year. I mean, it's very impressive. Very, very impressive. It's always cool. I mean, the players get a kick out of it. And, you actually get to see a Gary Harris bite from that Ohio State game on this week's Current Sports TV, because we interviewed Gary, and he is going to talk about his experience in the NBA. So you don't want to miss that, Mike.
All right, here's the last question. It's a lot of rivalries in high school and in college. I know that Michigan State tonight, Indiana and Purdue this week.
Right.
And I was thinking about your high school rivalry. Who's your high school rival? And how y'all did against them, man. I just take it off the air and have a good day.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate that. Well, for me, you guys know I am born and bred, and I'm a proud product of Detroit, Detroit's West Side. Shout out to Joy Road, Granville, Biltmore, Finkel, all of that. That's my hood, all right? I'm a proud product of the West Side of Detroit. But when high school hit, My mom was like, Al, you're not going into the DPS school system. So she actually sent me to Dearborn Heights, Annapolis High School, which is about 5 minutes from the west side of Detroit. Now, Annapolis High School, great high school, harbors some great relationships there. I loved it. I loved high school at Annapolis. It was great. It was very diverse as well. Great, got a great education there. And our actual rival happened to be Crestwood, which is also in the Dearborn area. And anytime that Annapolis and Crestwood got it on, it was on like Donkey Kong. I mean, the gyms were certainly packed. I remember playing high school varsity basketball and my parents showing up to watch that game. They made sure they came to that game. And my stepdad came to pretty much all the games, but my entire family made sure they weren't in the house anytime we went against Crestwood. So shout out to Crestwood. We definitely, if I can recall, it was kind of even. I remember splitting a season to Crestwood 2-2. Then I remember us beating him, I think, 3-1 during my senior year. So shout out to Crestwood, though. Anybody who went to Crestwood, I would love to hear from you, all right? So if that answers your question, Mike, yeah, Dearborn Crestwood was our rival when I was at Annapolis High School. All right, let's hit our first break for the show, maybe our first and only, actually. When we come back, we still got a ton to talk about, including Kevin Durant deciding to go silent, Anthony Bosch sentenced to 4 years, and we still got the top five worst sporting events coming your way. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports on this beautiful February 17th, 2015. It's actually Fat Tuesday. How about that, man? I know a lot of you guys have probably went out and bought boxes of Poonskis. We actually have a few in our engineering booth right now sitting on a table. So, yeah, don't eat too much, folks. Make sure you hit up Planet Fitness the day after, all right? Just like me. I'm trying to stay in shape, stay healthy as part of my New Year's resolution. I'm trying to stick to it, but man, oh man, are days like this hard. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I really briefly want to bring up a story coming out of the NBA concerning one of the NBA's brightest stars. He has been in, I tell you what, talks of, you know, the NBA's top player for quite some time now. A lot of people have him right under LeBron James. Of course, he had the famous rant where he went on record as saying, you know, I'm tired of being number two and so on and so forth. But his name, of course, is Kevin Durant. Now, Kevin Durant, he did not bite his tongue when talking to the media Saturday in New York during All-Star Weekend. He actually lashed out in a manner that we historically haven't seen Kevin Durant do so. He went on to say, quote, "You guys really don't know blank," end quote. That's what he told reporters. Now, his striking statement came in response to a question about continued speculation about Oklahoma City Thunder coach Scott Brooks' job security. Now, Brooks has often fallen under media criticism the past few years, but Durant has always been quick to defend Brooks, noting during his MVP speech, if you remember, that Brooks doesn't get any credit. He said, quote, "even though you deserve it all," end quote. Now, Durant was later asked what kinds of questions he preferred the media to focus on, and he said, quote, "to be honest, man, I'm only here talking to y'all because I have to, so I really don't care. Y'all not my friends. You're going to write what you want to write. You're going to love us one day and hate us the next. That is a part of it. So I just learn how to deal with y'all," end quote. Again, that comes directly from Kevin Durant. You know, it's interesting when looking at this because the timing of this couldn't be more impeccable. Because if you remember, if you could just rewind the clock to the beginning of this month, you guys remember that whole Marshawn Lynch situation? That name ring a bell at all? Of course, Marshawn Lynch, famed running back for the Seattle Seahawks, a team that lost to the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. Marshawn, I tell you what, watching it was pretty entertaining, though, I must say. But Marshawn decided to take a strike on the media and not answer any questions throughout at least half of the year, or most of the year, throughout this NFL season, bleeding into, of course, the Super Bowl media day and even after the game, for that matter. And I tell you what, Marshawn got a lot of attention for it and really looked at the media as, hey, I'm just here so I won't get fined. I mean, that you can put that statement on a T-shirt. It's been spoken so many times. But Durant feels as though the media, looking at how the media has been criticizing his head coach, Scott Brooks, he believes that, you know, hey, I'm tired of y'all. I'm not going to talk to you. I am not going to talk to you. Now, I must admit, being in this industry now for what, going on 4 or 5 years for me now, I tell you what, there are situations where the media does deserve criticism. Because frankly, hey, ratings and papers that are sold, that's what drives the market of sports journalism or journalism in general, no matter what it is. And, you know, the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads. You know, controversy breeds attention, and attention breeds interest. All of that goes hand in hand, folks. The media, yes, we speculate. We assume. We love controversy. And I want to preface that with also saying, though, that there are a lot of journalists out there that are not like that. There are a lot that just, hey, they do their job, they report what is there to report, and end it at that. But it's very hard, especially you know, coming to find in the talk sports world here on radio, that, you know, we need something to talk about, folks. And, you know, situations like this where, you know, where we're paid to break down teams and to talk about certain sports, we are going to say things that not everyone is going to agree with. That's what this media drives in many regards, especially in sports talk, because I'm going to give you my opinion, and if you disagree with it, you're going to give me yours, and we're going to try to talk this thing out. That's what drives sports talk radio. And, you know, even in columns, in editorials, where journalists are paid to give their own opinion on a subject, and it's printed, some of these superstars read those opinions. And Kevin Durant obviously is one of them. Obviously is one of them. You know, it's a funny story because you guys know I'm a big Michael Jordan guy. It's funny because Michael Jordan is a guy who, to me, in my opinion, he's my favorite athlete of all time. He is the greatest athlete of all time. I'm a big Michael Jordan guy. And you know what? Whenever Michael would have, you know, which was pretty rare, whenever Michael would have a bad game and there would be a write-up in the paper about how bad Michael played and he should have done this and should have done that, Michael would read that stuff and use it as motivation for him to go out there and perform to his highest ability to prove whoever that journalist was. You know, there's a famous story about Jordan coming down and dunking on, it's a famous story, I forget who it was told by, but it's in his Come Fly With Me documentary that he did during a little bit after his rookie campaign. And he comes down to court and he dunks on this little guy, right? And one of the fans from the stands yells, "Hey, Jordan, why don't you pick on somebody your own size?" So Jordan obviously turns and looks at him. The next time down the court, Jordan gets the basketball and dunks on the center. And Jordan turns to the guy who yelled the comment and says, "Hey, was he big enough?" So if you tell me that athletes should ignore what the media says and what the public says, that's all fine and dandy to say that. And it's another thing to do it. Because it sometimes it's so in your face, especially in this digital age where Facebook and Twitter and so on and so forth sort of is so popular that everyone has a voice now, and it's so easy to read. If you just type in Kevin Durant right now in the Twitter search bar, you would see so many posts from those supporting Durant and those bashing him at the same time. And frankly, this outburst is the result of really a boiling point of frustration because Kevin Durant has historically never been a guy to lash out at the media. In many respects, he's been a guy that's been a media darling. Always had a smile on his face, always very polite, always willing to give you his thoughts and or opinions. But this season has been a season that Durant, unlike any season that Durant has dealt with. He's had a lot of injuries. He's missed more games that he's played in. You know, they're fighting for that final pivotal playoff spot in the Western Conference that is so tough. There's no days off in the Western Conference. And, you know, this team is great on paper. They are, in many people's views, performing below expectations. And when you are the best player on one of the best teams, supposed to be one of the best teams in the NBA, and you're not performing, you get a lot of criticism. And frankly, the head coach gets a lot of that criticism. Scott Brooks, being a player's coach, you'll historically hear a lot of players say, Scott Brooks, I love playing for him. You know, he's a great guy, so on and so forth. So players are naturally going to stick up for him, and Kevin Durant is doing that. But, it, you know, in this situation, I can understand why he's lashing out, but at the same time, you have to understand the media forum as well. The media, they aren't going to stop criticizing you or giving you their opinion just because you lashed out and said you don't really want to talk to us. That's not going to stop. So you might as well find a way to deal with it. That's just my thoughts. It's not. Is it right? That's up for debate. But it's not going to stop. All right, folks. So let's transition now. Quick Top 5 Tuesday here. A Top 5 Tuesday that I'm certainly I'm going to probably ruffle a lot of feathers out there with. But, you know, watching the NBA All-Star Weekend got me to think, you know, because there are a lot of people that don't like it. What exactly are the top worst sporting events out there? So, here we go. Time for Top 5 Tuesday, folks. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That's right, folks. It is time for Top 5 Tuesday, where we list the top 5 sporting topic and, of course, in light of the weekend that was in the NBA, the NBA All-Star Weekend, which I tell you what, if you rewind the clock about 10 to 15 years ago, NBA All-Star Weekend was something that you definitely wanted to watch. A lot of players, preeminent players, participating in the dunk contest and so on and so forth. You know, it was more competitive, I think, back in the day when it came to the actual game. Now, not so much so. And it's just kind of hard to watch sometimes, especially Sunday. So, you know, I thought to myself, what exactly are the top worst sporting events? So I'm going to start with number 5 because I think that's the most watchable out of this entire list. Number 5 for me is the NBA All-Star Game because partly I'm a big NBA guy. I love watching it. You know, every once in a while you see a big dunk or a big shot. There are a few highlight moments because the athleticism that's on that court is pretty special at the end of the day, even though that athleticism is not matched with any defensive presence whatsoever. So I'm going to go with number 5, the NBA All-Star Game. Number 4, the NFL Pro Bowl. I just don't get it because the NFL Pro Bowl is one of those things where, you know, of course, you got the creme de la creme of NFL talent on one field. But at the same time, these players aren't going all out either because they don't want to risk injury. It's really tough on the eyes, folks. Number 4 is the NFL Pro Bowl for me. Number 3 is the Hockey All-Star Game. You talk about a tough watch. I mean, just watching constant goals go through the net. Really, no effort. You talk about you kind of can equate it to the NBA All-Star Game because no defense is really being played, no big hits because nobody wants to get injured. Kind of real fluffy. I think this year's All-Star Game set the record for the most goals scored ever in the history of the competition. Really tough to watch. Number 2, I'm going to go with the World Series of Poker. Come on, man. I mean, have you really ever just sat down and watched the World Series of Poker? How is that even a sport? I mean, you could go to your local casino and do that. I mean, I just don't get how ESPN broadcasts this thing every single year. I can never watch the World Series of Poker. That's just me. And number 1 for me, and again, I told you I'm going to ruffle some feathers here. We've had this debate constantly on the show. Oh, NASCAR. Watching a bunch of left turns just is boring. I'm sorry, folks. I just can't watch it. So that is numero uno for me. Do you disagree? Hey, I want you to call in on tomorrow's show or tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or leave a comment at Facebook.com/CurrentSports, and I'll read your comment on tomorrow's show, folks. I know I ruffled some feathers with that one. But thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have a fantastic Fat Tuesday, folks. And be easy, people.